Books presents Schism, written and read by Bruce Elgin. This book contains mature situations, including violence and intense fight scenes. Listener discretion is advised. Chapter 2. Scratches and dents in the rusted navy paint told the history of a driver who combined lack of driving skill with no sense of mortality. The car rumbled to a stop under a globe-topped streetlight. A diffused yellow light leaked through the windshield onto the two women inside. Sarah jerked the gear shift into park and slid her thick fingers under the waiting palm of the woman in the passenger seat. She spelled out letters and words against the palm, each new handshape forming and pausing for half a second. Jessica Moore listened. She tried to push back the smile and force on a gape of indignation as the story spelled out onto her palm. At the last word, she jerked her hand away, traced fingertips up to Sarah's shoulder and shoved hard. "You are such a tramp!" Her hands wove and jerked around the grocery sack in her lap and placed hard emphasis on the last word. But her smile showed the insult was a lie, and Sarah rang out an off-tone laugh in return. "Two men at once better. No waiting," Sarah spelled back. Jessica's dark hair rippled around her sunglasses as she shook her head. "You're going to get some terrible disease, and then no one will sleep with you." "Invincible!" Sarah spoke as she signed. The word came out loud in the car with no hearing of her own for feedback. "Not if you keep talking while you drive." Jessica's hand tagged Sarah with another shove, and the women leaned forward for a quick hug above the center console. Jess unwound her legs from the footwell of the compact car and stepped out, groceries in the crook of one signing arm. "Thanks for the ride. See you at work." A quick wave, and she barely had the door shut before Sarah jerked the car back into traffic. Jessica turned and switched the groceries to her left arm. She let her fingers wrap lightly against a lamppost as she counted her way to the front step of her apartment. 6 steps up, and she pulled the door open to the front vestibule, mail key already in hand. She reached into the box and pulled out what felt at first impression to be a stack of junk mail. It went haphazardly into the grocery bag before she retrieved her key and breezed through the inner door. Her free hand casually traced the wall as she walked toward her apartment. Her steps almost faltered as she noticed him. He was down the hall, near her door. His breathing, the way he shuffled in place when he talked, even his deodorant was unmistakable. He'd probably been in her apartment again. She'd have to smell him there for days. His voice squirmed its way to her before she could reach her door. "Hello, Miss Moore. How are you?" She forced her legs to keep a steady pace. She just had to get to the door, just had to get the key in the lock and turn it. "Hi, Harold. I'm fine, thanks." She felt the keys on the ring. The door key snapped forward cooperatively. But the key, sitting obviously in her hand, wouldn't be enough to ward him off. He could corner her there for 15 minutes, easily. She heard him inch nearer, felt it as her skin crawled in reflex. "I fixed your kitchen faucet today. Replaced the washers and the bathroom fixtures, too, just in case." "Thank you. You didn't have to do that." She made it to the door. One finger found the lock and the key slid in without any hunting. Turn it, open the door, then safe, alone, she thought. The lingering sweetness of the basil she had chopped last night floated out and battled with the gasoline, wood smoke, and cleaning fluid that Harold exuded. No good. She was still trapped, her escape blocked by the eager, needy little man. I'll try to make sure they pick someone quiet. For next door? Wouldn't want you to get some noisy neighbors bothering you. She picked a new tactic and arched her neck back with an Oscar-worthy fake yawn, but she imagined his eyes on the stretched tendons of her neck as she did. Maybe not the best plan, but she carried on. "Sorry, too many early mornings teaching. I better go crash." She chose her words carefully, no mention of anything as suggestive as a bed. Her shoulder pressed upon the door and she welcomed the green smell of plants and dark scent of potting soil mixed with the basil. Harold's petrochemical perfume faded a little as she edged inside. "I'll check your radiators later, get you ready for winter." She grasped the edge of the door, inched it towards shut. "No rush. Good night, Harold." A few more inches and it snapped shut with a click of metallic relief. "Good night." His voice was muffled through the wood. She listened, waited, and finally heard the thump of his flat-footed steps slap and creak down the hallway away from her door. Jessica turned and slid her groceries and mail onto the nearby kitchen counter before stopping to sample the air. She started toward the bathroom, slower than she usually would. Harold had only moved a chair out of place once while cleaning the air conditioning vent, but she was still cautious. A banged shin on a displaced coffee table would not improve her evening. She grabbed a towel and didn't have to sniff to know he'd used it. She had no idea why he smelled more like a car mechanic than a building super. Towel in hand, she swept into her bedroom and paused for a deep breath. At least he hadn't been in there this time. Once, she'd smelled his residue on her sheets and had almost bought a padlock for the door. But, she told herself, he did keep the place running. It was an old building and the rent was reasonable. A nosy superintendent was a livable problem to deal with. She walked to the kitchen and began preparing dinner. William's eyes snapped open, shut, open, as he stood over Dr. Weston's unconscious body. The fog that seeped from her right hand was dark red. As it hit the floor, it faded and disappeared. Her fingers were twisted, and the palm was curled in too tightly in upon itself. He hadn't wanted to hurt her. He had pulled her hand away from Mary, held it while she stared at him. The hunter had wrapped one hand around William's. The other went to Weston's throat. William followed the direction and held her still with one hand while the hunter made him squeeze her hand tighter, tighter. The bones in her hand had popped against each other, and William could only watch as the angry red began to seep away from her crushed fingers. Then the hunter had released her neck. The advisor stretched an arm to Weston. "Take these." There were keys on her waist, next to an ID badge backed with a barcode. William set his eyes on the small lines of the strip, tried to measure each one and drive the voices away with a detailed observation, but the fog would not retreat. He was trapped in it. "Go." The hunter was already crouched at the door, half in, half out. The caretaker had stood by Mary's bed when William first came in, then moved to Weston after the doctor collapsed. She looked up at William. "You need to leave." Her gentle hand passed through William's arm, gently pulled him down to the keys and badge. He took them, turned from the splay of the doctor's auburn ponytail to see Mary's eyes open and on him. Her eyes fixed, she swept a hand over her bedsheets, smoothed them back into place. "She is safe," the advisor said. Without a sound, Mary closed her eyes and turned away. William rose and shuffled out the door before the voices had to urge him forward again. Chapter 3. The alarm was going to go off. He had less than a minute, probably less than 30 seconds. Brian turned, stared at it. 6:59. He knew he could avoid the spine-clenching blare if he just reached over and turned it off, but the alarm was his only hope of starting the day. Just reach over, he thought. Get up without it. But his body wouldn't move. He steeled himself against the wail of the alarm, but still jumped when it blared out into the bedroom. He didn't move as the electronic whine pulsed over him. Finally, his right hand reached out, found his left wrist and the watch strapped to it. His fingers circled the face, began to find strength there. He pushed that energy into his chest and filled his lungs with a deep breath. Get up. Gotta get the bad guy. Claire had said that to rouse him after long nights. First, they were sleepless nights with her, then with the baby. Even without sleep, he had gotten up easily then. The alarm wailed at him, the noise of it not nearly as harsh as the fact that without Claire and the baby, he needed it. His eyes waited for the red glow of numbers to switch to 702. He could get up then, he was sure. The phone interrupted his battle. Automatically, he slapped the alarm into silence and grabbed the cell, jerked it free of the charger as he looked at it. The screen read, "Dispatch." He thumbed it on, lifted it to his ear. "Mickelson." A woman's voice on the other end dryly fed him details. "Lieutenant wants me on it?" Silence from the voice. "I'll go there first thing. We'll report in after." He closed the phone and sat up before the bed could latch back onto him. Gotta get the bad guy. William stretched and heard the rustle of his covering of leaves before he opened his eyes. He kept them shut. When they were closed, there was no fog to see, but that wouldn't shut out the voices. William blew out a breath and sucked in a new one. He opened his eyes and met bright sun, filtered through a veil of orange, red, and yellow. This was the third season of fall leaves he'd seen since being admitted to the hospital. The first two had been dimmed by the medication's haze. What he had seen so far this year had been wrapped in the wisps of fog that were trying to take back their hold on him. He had forgotten just how pretty the fall could be. The voices had taken that away, too. He turned, studied branches, the smell of the air, and he realized he was alone, in the woods, barely clothed against the cold. His teeth began to chatter in an offbeat staccato. Still, he smiled. He sifted leaves through fingers, felt veins and the soft crinkle of their rough flesh. He sat up and cupped them in his palms. Their bright colors began to dim, fade to gray. William dropped them and scooted back, but the fog rose out of the leaves, the floor of the woods, the trees. No. He clamped his eyes shut. He pushed out against the fog, tried to break it apart, to banish it somehow. It was too strong. He opened his eyes and the fall colors were transformed to a simple spectrum of black to white, each leaf and tree outlined, contrasted more sharply against everything around it. And he wasn't alone. No, he said. The voices' forms were more distinct. The advisor stood watching him as the hunter pointed down the hill. The caretaker coaxed William up and his face slackened as their presence numbed him. He followed them down the hill toward the city. Brian pulled his sedan to a stop in the parking lot and stared up at the sad, solid brick architecture of the mental hospital. His thumb found his watch and circled the rim of its face for a moment before he could open the car door. Inside, he dragged his feet down the hall. He turned a corner to see two patrol officers lounging at what must have been the right door, where they had found the doctor. They were each at least 10 years his senior and 30 pounds over his weight. He stopped. Brian ran a hand over his tightly cut hair. He knew a man who couldn't drag his own ass out of bed couldn't manage the required professional appearance of a police detective with much more than a buzz cut. He had no idea what was current for hairstyles, only that messy but short didn't get him yelled at. He saw the two men whispering to each other and started into the fray. The shorter of the two patrols, Edgars, threw him a false grin. "Hey, Detective Mickelson, welcome to the funhouse." He ignored their chuckles. The work would push him through it. "This it? Anybody see it happen?" Edgar shrugged and turned to the other, Jacoby. "Just the loon who was in here." "But she's not talking. Got about a jillion volts yesterday," they said. Brian looked into the room, a lone bed with sheets tangled on the floor. No body. No outline. He turned to Edgar's and Jacoby, saw them watching expectantly. "What's going on? Where's the victim?" Edgar's nodded. "Her? Yeah, some doctor. She's down in Mercy." "Busted up hand. Choked unconscious," Jacoby said. "Yeah, I thought you were homicide. What are you doing on an assault case?" Edgar said. Brian stared at them as a nurse hurried down the hall. Edgar's and Jacoby craned their heads after her. Brian stepped away from the doorway just as the nurse turned a corner out of view. Edgar's jerked his head in the direction the young woman had gone. "Guy that did it. His room's down that way." Brian said a silent thanks to the nurse and started after her. William picked his way down the alley. His light wool socks were sodden and torn from scuffling against the rough concrete. The advisor directed William's attention up the brick wall to a high second-floor window. "The window is open," the advisor said. "Go up inside. Take what you need." The caretaker stayed close to William, kept him from growing too cold. The hunter remained silent. He simply crouched low and bounded up onto the fire escape. His shadowed form seemed to melt and blur during the leap, settled back only after landing. William simply watched the change. The other voices always seemed to have the same form, but the hunter had always seemed more fluid than the others. Something about his physical power had always seemed too large for a human shape to contain. A dumpster hulked a few yards from the bottom of the fire escape. William set a tired shoulder against it and shoved. It rolled forward, arced toward the middle of the alley as it traveled, almost beyond the bottom of the ladder. He reached over the far side, grabbed its edge and clambered canoe-style onto the lid, felt the battleground of flaking paint and rust beneath his cheek as he caught his breath. He levered a knee under his stomach and stood shakily. One hand reached out, clasped the bottom of the fire escape. He stepped forward to stretch his other hand out, and the dumpster slid away beneath him. He stumbled, tightened his grip, and felt air beneath his feet as it slid to the middle of the alley. He hung from one arm until he felt the fog above him. The hunter reached down through the bars of the fire escape and touched William's free arm. William waited only a moment as he felt new strength fill him, then swung the arm up, took a firm grip, and pulled. Muscles in his arms and back contracted, working harder than he could remember, drawing him up and over the railing. He flopped down to the raw metal and found the caretaker waiting for him. Inside. He rose, wedged fingers under the open window sill, and yanked it up. As he stepped into the room, the fog receded and William stumbled at the change, almost like a sudden drop in air pressure. He caught himself, slowed his landing onto a padded rug in the middle of a small living room. The furnishings were simple, conservative leather and polished wood. William lay there, took in the human surroundings a moment. The smell was rich and deep, not torn by the cheap disinfectants his nose was used to. A round-bellied tabby cat strolled up to William and stared at him. As he reached a dirty hand to the cat, the fog rose up in the room. His hand faltered a moment as the caretaker swirled together in front of him. This way, she said, as the hunter and the advisor took shape behind her. William forced his palm forward and stroked the cat's back once. He lurched up and followed the voices down a short, hardwood-floored hall to a bedroom. The bed and dressers followed the conservative lead of the living room furniture. He stopped his inspection of the room as the advisor stepped into the closet door. William followed and drew it open. Inside was a row of suits, shirts, and polished dress shoes. The advisor passed deeper into the closet. William wedged two hands in and parted the sea of business clothing. Behind, he discovered an island of torn jeans, black army slacks, combat boots, and t-shirts, the treasure chest of an old-school punk. William pulled out a shirt, paled with use from black to dirt gray. The Clash, London Calling. Long ago, he had loved that band. The opening chords of Should I Stay or Should I Go began in his mind. He and Jess had sung it together, voices barely in tune and competing with each other to drown out the stereo in her apartment. He began to strip. Brian ducked in under the police tape and breathed in the quiet of the room. It was austere. White walls, white bed frame, white sheets, all beauty marked by an occasional yellow stain. His tour of the room brought him quickly back to the door, where the nurse from the hall leaned in over the tape. You a police officer? Detective. Brian Mickelson. He shook her hand and she bobbed in under the tape. She stopped and turned toward him, close by. Detective? Huh. That's kinda interesting. She smiled at him, but Brian looked back to his work, didn't focus at all on the brightness of her teeth or how full her lips were. The guy that attacked the doctor. This is his room? He asked. She switched tactics to a pout, but stayed close as Brian turned from her to the bed. William Adams? You think he attacked Dr. Weston? Brian studied the bed. Unmade sheets, rumpled pillow next to a constellation of slipshod patches in the plaster. He gave her no answer. I mean, I know that's what they're saying, but I don't see how he could have. His meds are really heavy. The guy could barely walk. She leaned against the wall and levered the side of her hip out toward Brian. Slowly, Brian noticed her presence, her available posture. He stared at her a moment, not sure what to do. He knew he had never been good at noticing or responding to such interest, even before he had met Claire. She had teased him about how hard it had been getting him to ask her out. And now, he regarded himself as hopeless at it. And dealing with an interested woman like this nurse wasn't a skill he was eager to practice. He turned away, hoped that work would protect him from her flirtation and his own uneasiness, as it had sheltered him from thoughts about Claire and the baby for the last 2 years. He lifted the sheets with his pen and nudged the pillow aside. Three small pills, partly melted, waited for him on the sheet. He pulled a small evidence bag from a pocket and finally turned back to the nurse. You think you could get me his file? This is author Bruce Elgin. Thank you for listening to chapters 2 and 3 of Schism. I hope you're enjoying it so far. Please stay tuned for chapters 4 and 5.